The two Seth sessions on this tape address a wide variety of topics. Our first selection comes from an evening when Seth fielded a rather large amount of questions from the students in the class. Often in Jane Roberts' class, there never seemed to be enough time for the students to pose all of the questions they wanted to ask. But every once in a while, Seth would take an evening and address as many questions as we could come up with. In our discussions about consciously creating our reality, students sometimes brought up the issue of jobs, relationships, and other situations that they weren't really pleased with. People often wondered whether it would be best to alter the way they related to a job or relationship, or to simply quit the job or end the relationship. On this particular evening, we were discussing beliefs and freedom of action in general when Jane Roberts took off her glasses and Seth came through.
I bid you good evening, and remember this. You have a right to say no. In the great affirmation of your being, you are conscious. You are therefore able to make a distinction. You can like something better than something else. Within the great affirmation of your being, you can deny. You can say no to a situation freely and joyfully and exuberantly, and feel free, and that you are using the abilities of your consciousness, your spirit, and your creaturehood. If you say no, you say no for a reason. Find out what the reason is. You have a right to it.
At this point, Seth continues with a discussion of the importance of allowing yourself to feel the full range of your emotions. In our culture, many people have been taught to mistrust themselves and their emotions. This mistrust leads us to keep guard on ourselves and to selectively repress certain feelings. Here is Seth now discussing these issues.
Never say no to your own feelings. Accept them. Hate will lead you back to love, if you allow it to. All emotions come from love. Hate shows you the distance between yourself and another person for whom you feel love. If you think that the majority of your fellow men are stupid, idiotic, and leading the world toward destruction, it is only because you love the race so strongly and feel the race falling short of the expectations of your love. If you allow yourself to experience that emotion, then it will lead you back to the realization of your love. But if you deny what you think of as hatred, disgust, or dissatisfaction, then it cannot lead you toward the destination for which it was meant. If you think you hate a parent, it is because there is in your mind such a separation between yourself and the love for that parent that you feel. If you allow yourself, therefore, to feel the hatred, you will also experience the love. You do not hate those for whom you have no regard. They do not bother you in any way whatsoever. They are outside of your notice. You love your enemies whether you know it or not. You are bound to them. For in your mind you constantly compare them with what you think they should be. In the vision of your greater love for them and for yourself. Whenever you think you hate, you love. But unless you allow yourself to feel the hatred, you will never know. If you hate someone and you beat a pillow and to pretend you are beating that person to death. Then when the murder is committed, you will realize the great love that you really feel. And the death will be the death of the hatred, not of the person. You cannot love yourself and hate your emotions. You cannot love yourself and distrust the reality that is your own. And within the great affirmation and the joy of your being, you can deny it and say no. For when you deny and say no, you are doing so comparing what you say no to what you want to say yes to. You are comparing in terms of an ideal that exists in terms of love within your mind. If we bloodless old ghosts are not afraid of emotion, I don't see why you should be.
Seth continues now by speaking to a specific student about trusting his spontaneous direction.
There are no clear mirrors to look through that will show you one impeccable, immaculate reality. And no one ideal column who can say, I shall and must do this and that to fulfill my abilities. There are instead an infinite number of probabilities. And you, my dear friend, have freedom to move within them. You want me to say you should do thus and so.
No, not anymore.
Or you want yourself to say I must do thus and so.
That's true.
But if you flow with the feeling of yourself, you will go where your being goes. Trust the lives that are within you now. Go along with your own living that flows through you. In your here and now, you are here and now. Feel that here and the nowness. Know its knowing. And you will be where the being of you wants to go. Feel yourself flowing and moving as easily through your life situation as the hair grows out from your head. As easily and naturally. Feel a wince that you want happening as hairs grow out from your head. Go with you be. Go with you be. Imagine what you think of as doubt. As a beautiful inner natural phenomenon, as rocks glowing in the sun, in the stream of your being. They are beautiful and natural. They are not impediments. You flow around them beautifully. They are a part of your being. Now remember that last sentence particularly, and I return to you.
The class then proceeded to discuss Seth's remarks, with some disagreement as to what he meant. Seth returned to comment.
Oh, not all. and much less in this group than usual. People want a pill called truth. You take it, and all your problems are solved. You know what to do with your life. There are no decisions for you to make. The pill solves it all for you. You do not believe in pills that come from a bottle any longer, most of you. But you want a metaphysical pill. And the metaphysical pill will solve it all for you.
What is the stuff that everybody calls enlightenment? All this Zen stuff that goes on there, and then somebody's enlightened, and then something else happens to them.
Now, if I could sing, I would sing, "What is this thing called love?" But I cannot. Enlightenment is a normal part of your consciousness. It is a function of your consciousness. There are very methods that you think will help you achieve it. As long as you think you need methods, you will run from method to method and from teacher to teacher. And the teachers will very cleverly work within your belief. If you believe that you are guilty, then you will go to a teacher who will say, "Yes, you are indeed guilty, and I will tell you how nasty and dirty you are." And in one way or another, he will show you how to do penance for your sins. It may be a wise and clever, a benign guru who gives you so many hits over the back with a whip. It may be a system of beliefs that tell you that you must work very hard for knowledge because you believe you do not deserve it easily.
This last comment was directed to a student who was involved with a teacher and a group of people dedicated to the philosophy of G.J. Gurdjieff. At this point, the student said that she didn't think that what Seth was saying to her was true. Seth replied,
"I do. And to see what you think when you are finished. If you believe that knowledge is difficult to achieve, it will be. But you will often, as in the instances I mentioned, work within a system that agrees with your beliefs. Now, up to a point, this is beneficial, and you will learn from it. And you will see within the system the reflection of your beliefs. And you will begin to move out of that system. But you need often the framework of the system and the agreement. So that often a beneficial framework is set up, but one through which you will move. Now, in many cases, and in such schools, in any schools of beliefs, you will find, for example, students who will set themselves apart and begin offshoots as their system of beliefs begin to change. You will find alteration. But in all cases, each of you the system of belief for your own purposes. There will be benefits involved, and you will move through each. There is no end to the creation of beliefs within your system. Each are handy reference points that you use, rocks that you stand on for a specific time. Now, when I say move on, I am not speaking in terms necessarily of higher or lower advancement. I'm not speaking of beliefs as rocks that lead to the mountaintop of truth.
Where do they lead?
They lead to other beliefs and to other realities, and to other creative activities that all extend the nature of your own consciousness, the nature of your own being, and that open up within yourself the acquiescence to new experiences that increase the being of your being. It would do you no good now to have 56 teeth. Your mouth would not hold them, and it would be difficult to smile or frown. I will leave you to make the connection with that analogy.
This last bit from Seth was directed to me in response to the question I asked about where beliefs led. I felt that the analogy Seth made about 56 teeth indicated that there was only certain types or ranges of experience and knowledge that fit, so to speak, within the physical framework that we are now in. But to think of our current condition as a lower or less advanced state of being is not really accurate. The seed of a tree is not in a lower or less spiritually advanced state than the giant oak it will grow into. Eventually, we will be moving on to other realities, and there we will experience further creative activities that we aren't currently ready to handle. This, of course, is not to say that we are fundamentally limited here, since we have access right now to other states of our being that already reside in non-physical reality. After a class discussion of these concepts, Seth returned.
You are here because you are beginning to believe in the freedom of yourself and in your own integrity. You are ready to sit and listen to someone who says, look into yourself, know yourself, and who at least will help you do so. Now, in your term, I have some very good points to say for you, and yet some liabilities. After all, you have bodies that you have to live in every day, and what you think of as intimate personal problems that go on all the time. And then, because I am not physically focused, I have the time, the energy, and the inclination to travel in other realms and tell you about what good is I can bring back. But I always remind you that in whatever terms you think, your consciousness is your own. Your abilities are your own. And those realities that I know are not necessarily yours, I will travel in my own way through reality, and you will travel through your own way in reality. Now, listen. In a manner of speaking now, and as an analogy, you are entities to the molecules within you. In your term, they send you out into realities of sensation and dimension that they cannot understand. You make a conscious decision to drive a car or not to drive a car. The molecules within you do not know what a card is. Yet your ability to drive that card is dependent upon the existence of those atoms and molecules. Yet for them, you go out into a reality that they do not know. They join their reality with yours, and theirs is vivid and varied and real, but it is not yours. And yet it is a part of yours, and they send you out, speaking now again as an inevitable. In terms of time, you are what they will look. Now, in terms of time, and following the analogy, oh, you little minded people, portions of you go out as you go out from your mouth and speak back to you and to tell you what reality is, that now you do not consciously perceive, but that are yours. Now think that.
The class continued with a discussion of Seth's remarks and wound up going back to the subject of love and hate. Seth returned to comment. A few words were lost on the original recording, so I'll give them to you now. Seth began by saying that when a child says to a parent, "I hate you," often the parent is appalled. He then continued.
The parent says you should not say that, or that is bad. And the child quickly learns not to be so honest. Now this is from my book. But what the child is saying, "I love you so much, and I sense this great love. What separates me from it now? And how can I return to it? And what has happened? And what is wrong?" And the hate operates in the same manner, regardless of your age and the personalities involved. And if you are taught to believe it is wrong, it is then more difficult to get back to love, because you begin to inhibit the feeling.
Here a student asks whether the hate or upsetness or frustration that you feel in relationships with other people exists because you are seeing yourself in them and because they are not doing the things you think you should be doing. Seth replied,
"To some extent, yes. Now, when you love someone, you are able to see what you think of or feel or interpret as the ideal. You are also aware of the separation from that ideal. But these do not bother you. You accept them, but you do not focus upon them. Now you may also, however, because of your identification, see in the other person your own ideal of your sin. And then perceive, as they seem to fall in their behavior from your ideal of happiness, also your own failures, and be twice as angry because it seems to you they are failing for themselves and for you."
The student Seth was addressing then commented he was getting the idea you have to learn to see people as independent beings and try not to identify yourself with them. Seth then commented,
"Or to be aware of the identification. There is ever know one point of perfection. When you think you have an enemy, you simply begin to focus upon the distances that exist between what you think the enemy is and what your love tells you the enemy should be. But because you believe hate is so wrong, you then do not focus upon the similarities between your enemy and the love that is involved. You are blind, for example, to his good points, and focus instead upon those qualities that separate you from what you think he should be and what he is.
Shortly thereafter, Seth returned to the topic of repressed emotion. A student had just asked Seth, where does all the hatred that people don't allow themselves to express go? Seth replied,
when you do not express it, then you damn it up. And you can express it against yourself in terms of physical symptoms or in your relationship with others. But if you realize it is nothing to be frightened of, then you are free of it. Hate is, as I have said before, like a summer storm. When you let it go, it lets forth energy and a rain that heals the earth. It is turned into quite constructive framework. It is good and natural. The sky would never think of holding back its storm. Again, it has better things. Do not fear negative thoughts. That simply adds to what you consider negative energy. Where would the world be without thunderstorms and even floods and hurricanes and earthquakes? That is how the earth changes and renews itself. To deny your emotions, any of them, is denying the aspect of your own reality, and it is literally impossible. Let it go, and no one will be hurt. The universe is not afraid of your hatred. It can hold it easily. Each individual alive has their own built-in defense and energy, and your hatred directed even against them will not hurt them.
Later on, Seth was talking again about love when a student waved his hand to get Seth's attention.
Now, it was the wink that did it.
What now? What if people love you and you're afraid to love them back?
What do I do?
Number two must try harder. Working with your belief, your sin, find out why you are afraid. Write down what comes to mind when you pose yourself the question and accept the answers that you receive. And because you get certain answers, this does not mean that you must then cravenly sit back and say, oh yes, I am afraid of loving because thus and so. You can say, these are the beliefs that I have had that have kept me from accepting love, and now I will accept those beliefs no longer. Or why you are afraid of being hurt, or showing yourself, or appearing vulnerable. But these are questions you must ask yourself and accept the answers and trust them. But then, no answers are eternal. Ride the answers. Say, I am a man of such and such an age, and if I do not want to believe that anymore, then I will not. And when you have done that, talk to me again. Do not be afraid of the vulnerability of your love or of your pleasure. Do not be afraid of being open. A tree moves with the wind and is vulnerable, and so it grows. If it tried to hold itself rigid, it would be broken off and dead.
At this point, a student asked Seth about depression. Seth replied,
Now it is too much to get involved in tonight, but in the latest book I have handled it, and you do not simply fall into a depression. Your beliefs cause the depression. Face the depression. Follow the feelings through, but realize that they are feelings. In the same way that you realize, hopefully, that beliefs are beliefs. There is a difference between, for example, the feeling, I am no good, I am unworthy, and the fact of being unworthy or no good. You may be the greatest success in the world as far as everyone else is concerned, and still feel that you are unworthy or no good. So when you examine or let yourself feel your feelings, realize that they are feelings and not necessarily definitions of truth. And then they will move you beyond them. And now, after our extensive question and answer course, I will return to your own questions.
After a discussion, Seth returned again, speaking to the whole class.
Think in terms of energy. You each have an infinite amount of energy. And in your terms of time, you are not always able to use it clearly or effectively, but it is always there. You each have your own moments of self-knowledge and comprehension and, in your terms, enlightenment. I am a lighthouse that is set up that you use to shed a light into the nature of your own knowledge. I am a ray in your terms, quite apart from my own reality, through which you see yourself, a channel through which you recognize your own energy, as now you recognize the miraculous clarity of your own being under the open channels that exist between you as you think of yourselves and the you that you are. There are no divisions between the portions of the self. There is no ceiling to your head or to your mind. You are not enclosed by your skin or by your age. These are open. Your skin connects you to the earth, and it connects you to far more even than your creaturehood. Rupert does indeed have it in his poem, The Speaker. For I speak for your molecules and for your entities. And I speak as your molecules and as your entities. And you translate my words. And through the translation, that is visible. You hear the voices of your own inner self. You have, in your terms, sent out a friend. Now, Joseph is older in your terms than Hubert. And Hubert always felt that Joseph went ahead of him into realms of time. So you send me out in the same terms into other realms that you do not understand. But Rupert and Joseph are portions of each other. And so we are all portions of ourselves. We are all unvoidable. We have all been on voyages that are not yet begun. You make the voyages in your terms as you go along. But you cannot deny the reality of your being. And you cannot help but identify your own vitality with this voice that speaks now, for it is also your own. Out of what vitality of your being are you now speaking? And from what dimension have you created this reality that you now listen to me speak when I am yourself? Out of what past have you created me and yourself? Out of what future are you not yet creating? What memory of yourself intrigues you so that you listen? What memory of yourselves is now triggered off by these words that are visible and yet have the meanings that exist beyond any realms of physical time or space or reason? For you are each infinite. And my voice is your memory spread in your terms across the spaces and the seasons. You intersect now with daily life. You have your challenges and your problems, and you are looking for your purposes.
In the next selection, Seth discusses several topics relating to the importance of trusting the authority of your own being. At the beginning of the class, we were discussing teachers and gurus who had strict rules and regulations about spiritual growth. A student who had been involved with such a person was discussing what she perceived as the rigid structure of reality put forth by her former teacher. Seth came through at this point to comment.
It is easy to give you a rigid structure. Then someone says to you, reality is such and such a way, and all you have to do is follow the proper path. But I am far more insidious, for I make you find your own reality and your own way, and I take away all the comfortable and the uncomfortable rules and the laws, and I return you to the authority of yourself. And how you all try to void of that authority. And how you say, I hear nothing and I see nothing. Now when that authority speaks, it is easier to listen to others who say, you must crook your nose and wiggle your thighs. You must say, Allah. You must wiggle your ear. You must speak to the gods in the silence. You must breathe properly. You must eat in the way I tell you. You must sleep in the way I tell you. You must visit with the people I tell you. You must visit with. Because you are all evil. And you are evil because you are alive. Now how can you beat that? If someone tells you that you are evil because you are alive and you believe it, you are indeed in a quandary. Now I tell you, you are blessed because you are alive. And I am blessed because I am alive. And my vitality is your vitality, and it speaks through your gut, and it speaks through your mind and your being, for it is your own. I merely let you taste the vitality of your own being, so that you draw sustenance and knowledge from yourselves. And that is your own joy and your own right to be and your own vitality. That is as secret as a trumpet. That is as dignified as a squirrel. It is the magic of your being. The knowing that you know. The isness of yourself. My voice is your own in the physical reality where you can hear it. My words are the words of your being exteriorized for you. As Rupert knows, there is nothing more truly occult than the spring and the flowers that come up apports from nowhere, and that is your magic and the secrecy of your own knowledge, and it is there for you and the world to see.
During a discussion of Seth's comments, a student remarked that if one believed oneself to be evil as long as he was alive, the only way to get out of being evil was to die. Seth returned and said,
or sacrifice yourselves, or make yourselves unhappy, miserable, ill, and filled with questions that you cannot answer because you do not want answers. To put yourself in life positions that are impossible. All of this because you have been taught that you are guilty because you are alive. Whether you get this idea from religion or psychology or science, the results are the same. And so my message is simply, you are blessed because you are. You can be joyful because you are. You have a reason here because you are here. Whenever anyone tells you that authority resides outside of yourself, do not believe him. When everyone tells you, though the world tells you, that your joy resides outside of you, do not believe them or the world. Your salvation does not depend upon another. You have never lost your soul. You are your soul. You are your soul in flesh. As a certain Sumeri document told Rupert, and he should read it for you. Honor your bodies. Your bodies are your souls in flesh. Do them honor. Whoever tells you that the body is soiled, do not listen to him. You can trust your bodies as you can trust your soul. In your reality, the body is the garment that the soul wears. And they are wedded as a man and wife is wedded. They are one. Now, I will have to tell us some jokes or return the class to Hubert to get some decent laughs and giggles out of you. You look as if you have been in a church.